You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, do you sweat a lot? More than the average human? We learn why we don't all sweat the same from a science journalist who dove deep into the world of perspiration in her new book. Now, Wisconsin Republicans have three audits of the 2020 election underway or in the works. That's despite the state's election results surviving multiple court challenges, a partial recount, and no evidence of widespread voter fraud. This week, one of those efforts ran into a roadblock. Republican State Representative Janelle Branchon issued subpoenas for voting machines, ballots, and other election material from Milwaukee and Brown counties. The legislature's nonpartisan attorneys have now said for a second time she doesn't have the authority to make that move. We're talking now about the latest on Republican election probes in the state and a number of Republican election bills that Governor Tony Evers vetoed this week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you make of these efforts to audit the 2020 election? What about efforts to make changes to absentee voting? What was your experience like voting in the 2020 election? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Laurel White is WPR's state capitol reporter. Laurel, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
A lot going on here. Let's start with the election probes here. Representative Branchon, who we invited, by the way, to join this conversation. We haven't gotten a response back. The offer is still out there, though. Representative Branchon issued these subpoenas. What did she say about why she was doing that?
Well, Representative Branchon, who is the chair of the Assembly's Elections Committee, has said that she thinks this probe is valuable because she thinks it's going to bring something different to the table than the other ones that you've already mentioned that are already rolling. Representative Branchon was among a handful of state lawmakers that actually traveled out to Arizona to witness the election audit. Some folks call that a forensic audit that, took place out there. And so basically that's what her proposed audit looks like. It's an Arizona style forensic audit, or would be if it was able to move forward.
And it's just those two counties, right? Milwaukee County and then Brown County, home of Green Bay.
That's right. And she told reporters, and she actually spoke about this at a rally at the Capitol last week as well, that she narrowed it down to those two counties because that's where she sees the biggest problems for potential voter fraud, in her opinion.
What did we hear from the legislature's nonpartisan attorney about whether the head of this committee has the authority to issue this kind of subpoena?
So as you mentioned, we've actually heard twice from the legislature's nonpartisan law office, essentially. And basically what they say is the subpoenas aren't valid because under a resolution that the legislature passed that gives subpoena power to lawmakers for election investigations, those subpoenas need to be signed by the leaders of the state Senate and the state assembly, respectively. And Representative Branchon's subpoenas have not been signed by legislative leaders. And therefore, according to the legal, interpretation of the legislature's lawyers, they're not valid. They don't have those signatures.
Has there been pressure on the leader you mentioned, in this case, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, to sign on to an effort like this?
We've been able to ask Speaker Voss his opinions on Representative Branchon's inquiry, when it was kind of in the earlier stages, she was talking about this. He said that he just doesn't see what it would accomplish. And so the speaker has been pretty consistent in not backing this particular effort. It's important to note that he is kind of the architect behind another one of the audits that's ongoing. He has organized an effort that's led by former state Supreme Court Justice Mike Gabelman, who was a conservative justice on the state Supreme Court. Initially, that effort included three retired police officers that were working under Justice Gabelman. Those officers have since left the investigation, but it's still moving forward. They're figuring out kind of how to reconfigure. But Speaker Voss is the architect of that. So he's not opposed to further investigations into the 2020 election. But he doesn't think that representative branches, at least what he said so far, would contribute to the conversation about that.
We're talking to Laurel White, WPR State Capitol reporter, about ongoing efforts to investigate the 2020 election here in Wisconsin and some bills passed by Republican lawmakers vetoed by Governor Evers when it comes to state elections. You can join in with your thoughts and questions on those issues at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Laurel, with this attempted subpoena of Brown County and Milwaukee County's ballots, election records, machines, I think, have we heard responses from election officials in those counties?
We have heard so far that, you know, they're reviewing the request. They certainly haven't released the information yet to Representative Branchen. I think it's also, you know, worth noting that Governor Evers was asked to weigh in on this earlier this week, and reporters asked him, do you think that these officials should release this information to the representative? And his words, his exact words were, hell no. So there's certainly some pushback to the officials releasing that information.
I mentioned three different paths of inquiry here. We've talked about this subpoena and the questions about its legal status. You mentioned Speaker Voss's effort with the former state Supreme Court justice leading it. What's the third?
The third is an audit that is being conducted by the Legislative Audit Bureau, which is a nonpartisan, another nonpartisan office associated with the state legislature. And this is an audit that was backed, again, by Republicans. The Republican-controlled legislature passed this, called for the audit. It's ongoing. I think we're expecting results from that sometime later this year. And actually, the chair of the Senate Elections Committee, Branchen, Representative Branchen, is the chair of the Assembly Elections Committee. The Senate chair said that she is invested in the outcome of this Legislative Audit Bureau investigation. She thinks that that's going to be fruitful. So when she was asked to weigh in on the representative's efforts, she said, you know, I'm looking at this Legislative Audit Bureau investigation. That's kind of where my attention lies.
And then part two here of our conversation today, we had Governor Evers vetoing a bunch of bills related to elections in Wisconsin, including some related to indefinitely confined voters. First of all, just to talk about a little bit about the broad scope of the things that passed the legislature and then the governor vetoed.
So what's going on here is that Republicans introduced a package of about 10 bills after the election that largely respond to Republican criticism of how the 2020 election was administered in Wisconsin. So some of the things that were brought up in those GOP-backed lawsuits, whether they were the lawsuits from the Trump campaign, Trump allies, as you mentioned, you know, indefinitely confined voters were mentioned in these bills. Indefinitely confined voters' ballots came up a lot in those Republican lawsuits. So basically, these are Republican efforts to change election laws to address some of those things that Republicans thought were handled inappropriately or are weaknesses, in their view, in the state election administration system. So specifically, what some of the things would do in that package of 10, and as you mentioned, the governor has vetoed six of those now, is to make it more difficult to characterize yourself as indefinitely confined. That's somebody under state law that has limitations that keep them from leaving their home and voting. So right now you can claim that status. You can get some exemptions for things you need to provide with your ballot, like a photo ID. And you can do that for an indefinite amount of time. Under the new restrictions, you would only be able to classify yourself in that way for a year, and you'd have to kind of resubmit those applications. So I think that's a good example, a very concrete example of, you know, additional requirements and taking away some provisions that make it a little easier for certain populations. That's kind of the way that a lot of these bills went.
We're talking to Laurel White, WPR's state capitol reporter. She's with us today to talk about the latest Republican effort to review the 2020 November election here in Wisconsin and for a look at Republican voting election changes passed by the legislature vetoed this week by Governor Evers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there changes you'd like to see in Wisconsin's absentee voting laws? Do you vote if you're willing to share your story using the indefinitely confined category and using that method of getting your absentee ballots? Do you want to see voter ID requirements tightened up for that category of voters? What do you think of ongoing efforts to review the November elections here in Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation about Republican efforts to review the 2020 election results here in Wisconsin. Despite those results in the state and around the country surviving multiple legal challenges and recounts, also looking at bills passed by the Republican legislature aimed at changing Wisconsin's election laws and vetoed by Governor Evers. WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White stays with us, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Are there changes you want to see made in Wisconsin's election system, things that you think need to be cleared up or standardized, things tightened up or loosened up? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to your calls now. Mark is with us in West Bend. Mark, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to say that the last time that I voted prior to this election cycle was way back when I first voted for the very first time in Obama's first term. And I only voted again, really, this time, well, fired up in general, but also because I was able to vote via absentee ballots, and my wife was the same way. And I would love to see a future Wisconsin or United States even, where everyone has mailed their ballot information and you can resubmit it, you know, if you want to vote or just toss it if you don't. But, you know, some sort of kind of combination online and mail program, because I feel like it inspires more people to vote the easier that it gets. And it's a shame that it feels like Republicans want to move in the other direction.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call. And Laurel, in 2020's elections here in Wisconsin, and I think in a lot of states, absentee voting was pretty popular in large part because of the pandemic, right?
It absolutely was. We saw absentee voting at levels in 2020 that we had never seen before. I think, you know, the conversation about mailing absentee ballots to folks or even mailing absentee ballot applications to Wisconsin voters is absolutely at the center of the conversation that's being had right now in the state legislature. One of these bills that the governor actually just vetoed this week was a bill that would have barred the state elections commission from sending absentee ballots or absentee ballot applications, like the caller just mentioned, automatically to voters when they hadn't requested them or not, just sort of sending preemptively to say, hey, here's your application if you want a ballot. Or, you know, some places, not Wisconsin, but some places have automatically sent ballots as well. And Republicans have a problem with that. They say that that's not secure. They don't want those going out in the mail without people kind of soliciting them. So there's a real strong partisan disagreement about, you know, that sort of absentee ballot by mail scenario.
Mark, thanks a lot for sharing your story at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Russ with us in Belleville. Russ, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Russ?
Well, I think I just saw a thing on TV a little bit about we need to reframe this discussion. We shouldn't be, you know, arguing about an election that they claim was insecure when it wasn't. And the fact of the matter is lots of other states are more progressive as far as making it easier for people to vote, whether it's through their phone, through the internet. If we can have banking securely, why can't we make it easy for our citizens to vote? Because that's what democracy should all be about.
Russ, thanks a lot for the call. Now, Laurel, I think most states don't let you vote directly online. There are things that Wisconsin has done to give access to our voting records, to request ballots online. Has that been part of this conversation in these bills that were just vetoed?
That is definitely kind of broadly part of the conversation, what can be done online and what can be stored online, actually, as well. One of these Republican proposals would require the State Elections Commission to keep paper copies of voter registration in addition to the electronic copies that they have when people register to vote online. So I think there's a push, kind of broadly speaking, from Republicans who have concerns about election security, that there needs to be a paper trail, that there need to be paper copies of things, that moving everything online, moving more things online, is really not the way they want to go.
Thanks for the call, Russ, at 800-642-1234. Laurel, I wanted to ask you, in your reporting, you talked about concerns from groups representing people with disabilities for some of these changes that the governor just vetoed. What kind of concerns did you hear?
Well, in addition to the concern about, adding more kind of bureaucracy and red tape to renew that indefinitely confined status every year, that's something that they said would be burdensome for folks. There's another proposal that the governor vetoed this week that would limit who can return an absentee ballot for someone else. So if you have someone who is disabled, more difficult for them to leave their home, they've had people, family members, caretakers, return their ballot for them, return it to the clerk's office. Under this Republican proposal that was vetoed, there would be very set limits on who could return that ballot. So it would have to be a member of your immediate family, or it would have to be someone that you had designated in writing to return the ballot for you. But if that person is outside of your immediate family, they can only be designated by two people to return a ballot. So basically what they're going against here is so-called ballot harvesting, where groups or individuals get a bunch of ballots, pick them up from people, take them in, drop them off. Republicans have concerns with that. But what disability advocates said was, it's really important for some members of our community to have their ballots delivered by other people. And any limitation on who could do that and penalties on, who could do that outside of, if they go outside of this group that's designated in the bill, that could be really problematic for people.
Talking to Laurel White, WPR State Capitol reporter, about elections in Wisconsin, ongoing probes led by Republicans into the 2020 elections, and a passel of bills passed by the legislature, vetoed by the governor when it comes to future elections and how they work. Back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Doug is with us in Rice Lake. Doug, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Doug?
Well, I'd like to bring up a few things. I have, except for 1 year in which I was in combat in Iraq, which was an absentee ballot opportunity, and those are, I accept those, would be a reasonable reason to have an absentee ballot. But since then, I have found it my obligation and duty to show up where I can vote, and I provide an ID, because I'm required to show an ID, that I am who I am. The person behind the desk, they have sworn that they will uphold all these rules and regulations of voting. And so then I got to start questioning all these other means in which voters can vote. And I just see an opportunity for a lot of people in the graveyard to be voting or ghosts.
Doug, thanks a lot for the call. No evidence of the dead voting in Wisconsin, Laurel, but Doug's concerns, I think, echo some Republicans saying they don't feel like absentee voting is necessarily as secure as in person.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, they want to close some of these, what they call loopholes for absentee voting, like indefinitely confined voters, being able to have someone sign off and certify that they are who they say they are instead of providing a copy of their ID with their ballot application, things like that, that they say just make the process not as secure as they want it to be. on the other side of the coin, you know, folks push back and say that not everybody's able to, for, you know, a variety of circumstances, show up on election day and when polls are open to be there in person to submit their ballot, to show their ID in person, and that those people deserve to vote as well. So really fundamental kind of disagreements there.
Thanks, Doug, for the call. Let's go to Karen now in Shorewood. Karen, hello.
Hello. Thank you. This is a great conversation. I was driving down the street when I heard this, and I thought, I'm an indefinitely combined voter. I've been so since 2007. And I think the people who run elections run them very well. And any attempt to change this, to me, is someone trying to take away my ability to vote. And I have been voting in every election since I was 21. I vote in local elections, I vote in state elections, and I vote in federal elections. And it just really upsets me no end. It just seems to me just another form of voter suppression.
Karen, thanks a lot for the call. And Karen, making a case that I think Democrats in our last half a minute or so, Laurel, made reacting to these Republican proposals.
Absolutely. That's really the pushback, is that there is a population of indefinitely confined voters in Wisconsin who face barriers to voting that other folks don't, and that the state has an obligation to provide some accommodations to make it possible for them to participate in the democratic process. So it's finding the balance between, you know, what Democrats say need to be done to make that happen and what Republicans say they're comfortable with in terms of election security.
Thanks for that call. And Laurel, thanks again for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Rob.
That's Laurel White, WPR's state capitol reporter. She joins us today to talk about the latest on Republican audits of the 2020 election and a number of Republican election bills Governor Evers vetoed this week. Coming up, do you hate being sweaty? Our next guest wants you to find the joy in sweat and all that it can do. We'll talk about the long history of perspiration and how we've tried to cover it up. I'm Rob Barrett. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Now, a timely topic. A lot of us are sweating our way through some hot and humid Wisconsin days. And we may not be wild about all the perspiration, but maybe we should respect that sweat. It's part of what makes us human, and it can reveal things about us, like what we've eaten, drugs we may have taken. It could even help diagnose disease or find love. Our next guest wants us to shift our perspective and appreciate sweat for the gift that it is. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever been worried about how much or how little you sweat? What situations do you find yourself sweating in most? Are you a nervous sweater? Person who just sweats all the time? What questions do you have about how perspiration works and why we do it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sarah Everts is a science journalist with a master's in chemistry. She teaches journalism at Carleton University, and her work appears in places like Scientific American. Her new book is called The Joy of Sweat, The Strange Science of Perspiration. Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, it's great to be here.
What led you, Sarah, down the path of sweat?
Well, you know, I've always been a little bit worried about my own sweating, kind of mortified by it. I'm a big sweater. So, you know, in a workout, I'm already grabbing my towel during the warm up. So I, you know, have always kind of been worried about it, but I'm also a science journalist. And I know that evolutionary biologists count sweating as one of the really unique and wonderful ways that humans are distinguished from other animals, like being naked or having big brains. And so I thought, you know, I need to dig into the science of sweat to find a little bit more serenity rather than shame in all the sweating that I certainly do.
Yeah, you write that animals have lots and lots of ways to regulate their heat. We're not the only animals who sweat, but we are particularly good and efficient at using sweat as our cooling off mechanism. How unique are we humans?
Well, so the only other animals that really rely on sweat to cool down are cows and horses, but they don't produce as much sweat as we do. And part of the reason humans are so efficient at cooling off with sweat is because we're naked. So the way that sweat cools us down is hot blood from our interior swooshes up to our skin. That's why people who have light skin turn red when they're really hot, because there's a whole bunch of veins right up against their skin. And that hot blood swishes by water from sweat that's evaporating away. And that body heat is pushing that water into the atmosphere and whisking the heat away. And then the cooler blood swishes back into your body. But, you know, as anybody who has tried to dry off, a wet head of hair or fur doesn't evaporate water as efficiently as a smooth surface. And we have a ton of real estate. Our whole skin is naked. And if you just consider a dog, so they cool off by panting, and they're relying on their most naked surface area, which is their tongue, which is a tiny little bit of real estate to cool down their whole bodies. And so that's why humans are so efficient. And, you know, as I kind of alluded to with dogs, if not sweat, then other animals who are desperate to cool down will use other bodily fluids like pee. That's what seals sometimes do, or vomit, or poop. And so, you know, when you think about it, even though sweat can be kind of arguably gross, we have millions of sweat glands just devoted to that, and it's a lot better of a body fluid to evaporate water away than some of the other options we could have faced.
Yay, sweat. Okay, I'm all for it. Now, water is the active ingredient here. That's what gets out and evaporates, but other stuff comes along with it. For one, salt. Why is sweat salty?
So sweat is salty partly because we are, you know, salty oceans on the inside. So you probably, or maybe you don't know this, sweat is actually sourced from the watery parts of blood. It's pretty much blood minus the big stuff like red blood cells and platelets and immune cells. And so pretty much anything that's circulating around in blood comes out in sweat. So including, you know, big things like vitamins and, you know, hormones and, you know, all sorts of other things like salt as well. So it's just kind of circumstantial. It's because, you know, there's salt in our blood and, you know, it's coming along for the ride. But you're right. The only thing you really need to cool off is the water part of blood, or the water part of sweat. Sorry.
We heard from Shelley in Madison, who asks a question that I came to your book wondering, actually. Shelley wants to know if it's true you could actually sweat out excess toxins. So is there's like a therapeutic value where sweating out all the bad stuff?
So interestingly enough, that's actually a myth that has been propagated for millennia, actually. But if you think about it, because sweat is sourced from the watery parts of blood, if you wanted to get rid of the bad stuff, the bad chemicals that are circulating around in your blood system, in your body, you would literally have to sweat out all the water in your blood. That would leave you utterly dehydrated and kind of dead. Instead, kidneys filter your blood from all the bad stuff and dispatch that out of your body in pee. Anything that's kind of circulating around, good stuff like hormones, bad stuff like urea, that's just along for the ride. And so, yeah, the detox sweat myth is indeed just a myth, actually.
But hold on. You spent a lot of time checking out saunas or saunas in your book. Just because they're not sweating out toxins, it sounds like there may still be health benefits, right?
Yeah, there totally are. So, you know, it's interesting. Spas worldwide promise all sorts of things from a sweat, most of which are hogwash, I have to say. Sweating does not cure cancer. But what it actually really is good for is heart health. And that's because when you go into a sauna, your body detects the fact that you're in a very hot place and freaks out and starts pumping blood very quickly to the surface of your skin so that, you know, you can sweat a lot and cool that blood whooshing by. So that effectively gives your heart a workout. And so, you know, when you are in a sauna, as the Finnish like right. to say, your heart is getting a workout, and you're also getting the side happy chemicals that you get from a workout, like endorphins. These make you feel a certain catharsis. So you feel good, and your heart is getting a workout. And actually, there's a great Finnish study that showed that men who go 4 times in a sauna compared to 1 time in a sauna per week have, you know, lower incidence of heart attacks and, you know, cardiac mortality, and all sorts of other heart disease. So yes, going to the sauna is good for your heart. You know, a lot of the other claims are a little bit questionable.
Talking to Sarah Everts about her new book, The Joy of Sweat, The Strange Science of Perspiration. You can call in with your experiences, your thoughts on sweat, everything you ever wanted to know but were afraid to ask. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Steele is with us in Appleton. Hey, Steele.
Hey, everybody. I was fortunate from 1968 to 71. I was an Army brat, 9th through 11th grade. In the summers, we'd get on buses and go downtown and in the subways. And it was a different smell in those days. The women still didn't shave, and they didn't have deodorants. And after a while, I still have that memory of...
I didn't catch where you were, Steele. Were you overseas?
Berlin, Germany.
Berlin,
I was
Germany.
An Army brat.
Okay.
From 9th through 11th grade. And so I just remember, you know, at first I was knocked out, and I learned to embrace it.
Steele, thanks a lot for that call. And he gets into, Sarah, something you spent some time on in the book, our negative associations with the smell of sweatiness and whether we as Americans are particularly averse to those smells.
Oh, definitely. So Americans like to put on deodorant and antiperspirant and pretend that we're a citrus flower or some Old Spice rather than a human being. But, you know, body odor, you know, I also wear these products too. You know, it can be some serious pong. And what's really interesting, though, is that we have two kinds of sweat glands. You have the ones responsible for cooling you down that dispatch the watery stuff that, you know, floods your skin when you're in a sauna. But another kind of sweat gland appears at puberty in armpits and is responsible for morphing those zones into stinky places from adolescence and onward. And that's a sweat gland called the apocrine gland. And its sweat is actually kind of waxy, more like earwax than anything else. And it actually comes out relatively odorless. And it's actually the bacteria and other microorganisms living in your armpit that eat that particular sweat and metabolize, which is a scientific euphemism for poop out the stinky odors that we associate with BO. So, you know, good news, it's not actually stinky when it comes out. Bad news, it's the bacteria making you stinky.
Thanks a lot for the call, Steele. We'll go to Angela next in Madison. Angela, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I feel like I'm missing out on the joy part because for most of my life, I rarely sweat. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. It doesn't matter how hot it is. I walk miles most days, and I rarely sweat. So I've always wondered, what am I missing out on, and why? So that's my question.
Interesting. Why do some people, like Angela, sweat less than others, Sarah?
So it's a mix of nature and nurture. So certainly genetics plays a part. Some of us have more sweat glands on our body. Most people have between 2 and 5 million. I got mine counted. I have 3 million. Then there's also the rate of sweat, like how fast it's flowing out of those glands. And that can be, you know, really slow to really fast. And then there's, you know, some people have genetic differences where their sweat glands don't actually develop in utero. And that's really an extreme kind of exception. People who have that kind of don't have sweat glands can't even go for a walk
Wow.
in the sun without like near death experience. But you know, there's also this nurture side, which is you know, when you're born with all of your sweat glands, but they're not all fully functional. They don't become functional until the toddler years. And so in those early years of life, your body is taking note of the environment in which you are in and where you've grown up and kind of figuring out, you know, is this a place I need to be sweaty or not? And so where you spent your formative sweat years, your first couple of years of life is going to also make an influence. But, you know, some people sweat a lot, others don't. And really, it is a mix of nature and nurture. And, you know, athletes, for example, try to do training to increase their sweat rates when they go to, say, the Olympics in Japan, where it was extremely hot and muggy. And so if you train in a sauna, you can actually get your sweat rate to go up. The good news or bad news, actually probably bad news in this weather, you can't train your sweat rate to go down, which is probably good because we'd all die that way.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Sarah Everett, science journalist, author of the book The Joy of Sweat: The Strange Science of Perspiration. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about sweat, about perspiration, and observation from your own life or the sweat of others? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, take more of your calls coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Sarah Everts, science journalist and author of the new book, The Joy of Sweat, The Strange Science of Perspiration. Back to your calls now with Kay on the line in Madison. Kay, hi. Are you there, Kay? We don't have Kay. That's okay. We got lots of callers. Sorry, Kay. We'll go to Tom then in Milwaukee. Tom, hello.
Hi. I'm curious. I have a suspicion that we are perspiring 24 hours a day. I wonder if that's true, even if we're cold.
Yeah, actually we are. So our body is constantly making micro adjustments to our internal temperature. And so we only actually typically notice sweat when we go to a really hot place or we start getting active. But yeah, our body is constantly releasing tiny bits of sweat to just make a tweak here and there to our body temperature.
Tom, thanks for the question. We'll go next to Nancy in Ridgeland. Nancy, hi.
Hi. See, I've noticed that when I can go out and work on my farm and work up a pretty good sweat all day long, and I don't have a lot of body odor. I don't really wear, I don't wear deodorant. Don't need gym. Don't have anybody around here. But anyway, but then if I'm going to go and give a talk somewhere and I'm nervous or I might be a little nervous about it, I tend to feel like I perspire and that particular sweat has a different odor to it. Ooh. And I'm wondering if that's true or if that's just my imagination.
Oh, it's very true, isn't it, Sarah?
That is so true. I am so glad you asked that question. This is one of the most interesting areas of research on sweat, in my opinion. So, you know, law enforcement actually had long noticed that when people come into an interrogation, they smell of themselves. But when they leave, everybody kind of smells the same of this like potent pong of fear or anxiety. And, you know, researchers, when they wanted to follow up on this, did this fun t-shirt test where they gave people t-shirts to wear and put them in front of a TV and either showed them a nature documentary or a really scary movie so that, you know, they sweat either out of anxiety or just, you know, normally. And then they took those t-shirts and they gave them to an independent panel to sniff. And these sniffers who didn't know those individuals, couldn't see them, could tell who was anxious and who was not. And one of the most interested parties in funding this research is actually the U.S. military, because you can imagine that in a combat situation, people in, say, closed quarters, like a tank, if one person gets really anxious and scared, they produce this odor and it could, you know, spread fear, spread anxiety to other people in that closed quarters and perhaps compromise the mission. And so they have hired chemists to try and pluck out of the air that molecule and figure out how to sequester it like you would a poison gas or maybe even CO2. Here's the thing. There are hundreds of molecules that smell coming out of our armpits and chemists haven't yet figured out which is that one that's the top note of anxiety, but they're working on it. And yeah, maybe at some point we'll find a way to capture it and, you know, get rid of it too, because it is really a potent odor.
Nancy, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Sarah Everts about her new book, The Joy of Sweat, The Strange Science of Perspiration. Back to your calls now. Owen is with us in Wyawega. Owen, hello.
Hi, Rob. Can you hear me all right?
Loud and clear. What's your question, Owen?
All right. Well, so when I went to work in the oil field and on the ironworking crews out in the south and the west, California, Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, I grew up in the East Coast, you know, and we always wore short sleeves. Well, got out there, everybody who was older, not the younger guys, but the older guys on the crews, always wore long sleeves, and I never understood why. And then they told me to try it because it holds the sweat inside of your clothing and keeps you cooler, and you don't lose all that perspiration and you don't dehydrate as quickly. And it actually works really good. And a lot of the black guys take it to an extreme. They wear like a waffle, real light waffle long underwear underneath their long sleeve shirts too.
Oh, wow. Owen, thanks a lot for the call. You write about this, Sarah. Owen has rediscovered an ancient desert tradition here.
Yeah. So you can imagine that when you're in a really dry area, what is happening is your water is evaporating up off your skin, and then it's really whisking away into the atmosphere because it's so dry. Whereas in a humid place, it's actually harder for you to cool down from sweating because there's already a lot of water molecules in the space around you, and it's kind of crowded. And so in a humid place, it's actually harder to cool down from sweating. The problem is, though, is when you're in that dry heat, that water is evaporating so quickly away that you are dehydrating very quickly. And so by wearing kind of loose clothing, you keep kind of like a little bit of vapor pressure around your skin, and it doesn't whisk away so quickly. Also, you are protecting your skin from the sun's direct rays. So, you know, when you're working in a dry place, you know, you're obviously creating heat from inside your body. But if it's really harsh sun, then you're being heated by the sun as well. And so, you know, in a dry place, that's why you want to wear loose clothing to protect you from getting more heated by the sun, and to, you know, keep your hydration closer to your skin so you don't go through your water as quickly as you would otherwise.
Owen, thanks for sharing that experience. We'll go now to Kurt with us in Fort Atkinson. Kurt, hello.
Hi. Only my right armpit smells. Is that unusual?
Oh, I love this question. Okay, so first of all, you got to know that you're not alone. I actually got my armpit sniffed by a professional nose. This is a woman who gets hired by deodorant companies to test their products, right? To see whether they work for 24 hours or not. And, you know, she literally sniffs people's armpits after they've put these products on. Anyway, if you donate your armpits to science, like if you are one of these subjects who actually is, you know, putting deodorant in one armpit and nothing in the other to do the compare and contrast, to be that kind of subject, you actually have to be a person whose armpits produce equal amounts of odor on each side. And guess what? A lot of people aren't allowed to get hired to be, you know, armpit testees because of that. So you're not alone. I've heard a lot of what I now call sweat confidentials. You know, when you tell people you're writing a book about sweat, you hear all sorts of really interesting stories about people themselves or their friends. And yeah, some people sweat heavily on just one leg. You know, you hear all sorts of stories of people sweating excessively in one spot, but not another, and, you know, producing odor in one spot and not another. So, yeah, solidarity to you. You're not the only one.
You're not alone, Kurt. In our last few moments, Sarah, you mentioned you sweat a lot. You came into it not wild about that. Have you embraced the sweat now, having gone through this experience?
You know, I've certainly come to serenity as I kind of had as a goal. You know, I think with sweat, unlike many other bodily functions that might embarrass us, like a burp or a fart, you can kind of take yourself out of the room and deal with that and, you know, come back to a social situation. With sweating, it is is out of your control. And humans do not like that, especially in this era of curated personalities and curated images. But, you know, I came to the conclusion, you know, sweating is like my body trying to cool down, trying to keep me alive. And quite frankly, I appreciate it. And I think we all should, especially as temperatures around the world rise, you know, as we face a coming climate apocalypse, we're going to need to be able to cool down. And sweating is a superpower that does exactly that. So yeah, I hope, you know, I hope I'm not the only one who got a perspiration pep talk out of doing this research.
Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Really my pleasure.
That's Sarah Everts, science journalist, author of the new book, The Joy of Sweat, The Science of Perspiration. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's the morning show. Tomorrow at 8, census numbers are out. Find out where populations went up and down in the United States. That's tomorrow at 8 on the morning show. Up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then an epidemiologist tells us about mask mandates and what we ought to think about before we bring them back. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.